From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe.
Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe. If you need someone to listen, we're here for you. So long as you're willing to be ignorant of the restraints of the podcast medium. We are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, here today to take in a captivating Chelsea episode. And that is about all I can give you. That's where my wit ends on the current state of affairs, for Chelsea has done her thing.
I would have liked to see you go for it just a little bit more.
Sometimes.
But you have. I will give you that, like you just said.
But the last time I got shut down hard, there was, it just was wrong. So
it's true. Anyhow, man, was this week's episode hard to pick? And not for lack of ideas, but not only do I like to split up the assholes with something light, but I did this like literally a couple minutes before recording. Just kidding. I don't care about the order of the episodes. But in those minutes before the recording, the Dead Popes and I convened. And after that, I thought Vatican Secrets would be a nice episode for you because they were so against this episode. And in reflecting back at my research, the Vatican has so fucking many secrets that I couldn't have possibly covered them all in one episode.
In fact, many of them are about fucking, so.
Actually, none of the ones I looked at were about fucking.
Well, that's good. It can be its own episode. Maybe that's our Valentine's Day episode next year.
Oh my god.
The sexy side of the Popes.
When this episode's getting edited, write it down. Or someone listening, please put it into the comments. We've already covered one secret in an episode. I think we all remember AI Ouija. I think I just hit the quota for them to sponsor us now.
Yeah, we said it 7 times. Now you gotta.
Yeah, now you gotta.
That's the rule. Who's
in charge of that again? Friar Bernardi. Somebody tell him. As I started going down the roads of secrets, thinking it would be a fun little episode, it turned into a massive secret beast in which I had to cut it down to only 3 secrets. Maybe 4, depending if you're good. I know we also want to do an episode on popes, so this will be a nice segue and also some fodder for a future episode. So with that being said, let's jump into some secrets.
Chelsea, before we start, I just want to confirm, yeah, we don't have to whisper the entire episode, right?
That's a good question. Maybe we should.
Well,
you gotta listen to it on level 1. Just turn it down so that you can barely hear it, because I'm gonna forget that I need to be whispering. Number 1. I don't even know why this is a secret in the first place. I would be proud.
Is it the Pope's secret marinara sauce?
That, you know what? That secret would never slip.
Well, and everybody knows the secret ingredient is adrenochrome, so we can just leave it at that.
Adrenochrome? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's adrenochrome. I was just
and a little bit extra souls. Rosemary.
But adrenochrome is as close as you can get to souls. Number 1. The chief exorcist of the Vatican performed 100,000-plus exorcisms. You heard that right. Father Gabriel M. Morath is a late priest and served as the chief exorcist of the Vatican. He served for 60 years and is believed to have performed approximately 160,000 exorcisms. That's even more than 100,000.
Sorry, I gotta do the math on this 1 second. 60 years, you said, right?
Yeah.
There are...
Yeah.
21,009...
How many demons is that?
Well, it's 21,960 days in 60 years.
Huh?
He's performing 8 a day. 8 exorcisms a day.
I think it comes up how much that he's doing.
Okay. So, just, I want to get this straight. If he's just an average Joe working man who is working 8 hours a day, taking his lunch breaks, he's doing 1 an hour.
Yeah.
On average. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And he can't even, I guess
he might be doing some overtime here and there.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes he's working Saturdays.
Well, they're exempt from labor laws, you know. They're usually one of those exemptions.
Or he's pulling the
night shift. Sorry, you can continue with this.
Who knows? The exorcism rite, however, is not just limited to the late chief exorcist. It has been performed by various popes over the years. Really?
Yeah.
Popes are doing the dirty work?
It's not really. Is it dirty work?
Exorcisms? Oh, yeah.
We did a whole episode on it. I don't think they're all dirty work. Like, they exorcise buildings. And
yeah. And then they need to take... Parks. And they don't even care at what point the exorcism is at. They need to go out and take their breaks and swing on swings and stuff.
Yeah.
Take their juice break. And that's when the exorcism becomes so intense that people die, I think. I can't remember.
There were juice, that is for sure.
Popes.
It's a good episode. You guys should go back and watch it. Also,
oh yeah, like, that was a great episode.
Top 5 best named episodes. Oh, exercise, yeah. Good for the soul.
It's come up like recently before too. In 2018, BBC reported that the Vatican welcomed 250 priests from across the world to an annual workshop. Amorth had co-founded the International Association of Exorcists in 1990 to help inspire and train other priests. Headquartered in Rome, its first international conference took place in 1994 and became a biannual event. The Vatican formally recognized the group in July 2014. Amorth said he performed as many as 20 exorcisms a day at his peak. He detailed the process in Marcello Stanzione's 2020 book, The Devil is Afraid of Me, the life and work of the world's most famous exorcist. Amorth claimed exorcisms lasted about 30 minutes on average, and it made little difference if they were performed over the phone, via Skype, or in person, or by AI.
So, just, yes. I have to ask, is it because they were useless? None of them worked.
It's because they didn't actually work. For the latter, Amorth had the assistance of 4 laymen who escorted patients to a room away from the Roman streets so that passerbys couldn't hear the screaming. Despite performing an absurdly high number of exorcisms, one claiming as many as 160,000, Amorth said fewer than 100 involved true demonic possession. I wonder what the rest included. In such instances, Amorth said the possessed would spit out shards of glass, pieces of metal, rose petals, and other items. He kept a collection of plastic figurines, nails, and keys as proof. He also said he witnessed feats of superhuman strength, like an 11-year-old boy hurling away 3 police officers with ease. He also claimed to talk with the devil himself.
I just want to be sure.
Yeah.
Was that child doing that while he was on the phone? Or was this one of the in-person ones? Also, I see the devil being a Skype kind of guy.
I do love that he just threw it in. Like, it's the same if I did it over Skype. The implications of that are limitless.
I'm really curious how he phrased it the first time. He decided to do that. Like, yeah, what's the difference?
Yeah, exactly. Let's just try it.
Oh, it's good.
And then he was like, let's just try this one over Skype. And then he was like, same result.
Seems to have worked.
Nothing. And he did talk to the devil himself, so I wonder if he came to the conclusion that the devil is just pissed off that he always tried to help out people building churches, and he just always got fucked over.
Honestly, I feel like the conversation with the devil was like, look, I got 5 more minutes till my next one. What do you got? Make it quick.
Like, what do you gotta say? I don't really have time to talk to you.
I'm on the clock.
Do you want to help me build my church or not? I'm actually feeling relieved that they have a chief exorcist role to fill. Do they still have one, like, currently, or has it been replaced by Friar Benatti, who is being debriefed on things like Ouija.com? How much did we make for that reference? Nothing? Okay.
Nothing, yeah. It says right now it is... No, never mind. I think it is vacant. Everybody talks about Gabriel, but he died in 2016. Yeah.
It's vacant, hey? Well, huh. I feel like I couldn't fill a role at the Vatican, unfortunately.
That's the closest role. How much did it pay?
Oh, is it open? Does it say?
And, sorry, I gotta look. Annual salary.
How much does a Pope make? Does he make a salary? He would have to make a salary.
Doesn't come up. Man, you know what? This is a job for AI. How much?
Okay, let's see what AI has. So to continue on why Taylor does the digging for us on salaries of jobs at the Vatican. But, oh, just take a look at like indeed.com for the chief exorcist application.
It's got to be up there.
Stay on there. The Pope's Exorcist is actually a movie on Netflix at one point. Don't hold me to it that it's still on there. It stars Russell Crowe and is based on Gabriel Amor's case files. If you're really interested in...
Okay, Chelsea, I don't have a number for you, but AI is telling us to stay away. As for the salary... Sorry, and this is Copilot on Microsoft. As for the salary of the chief exorcist, it's essential to understand that this role is primarily a religious and spiritual calling, right there, red flag, rather than a conventional job with a fixed income. Exorcists serve out of their faith and commitment to helping those in need. Therefore, their compensation is not based on a standard salary structure.
Okay, so that leads me to believe that in his talking to the devil, he was on the devil's payroll.
Yeah.
And he was just doing the loophole thing where the devil would come to collect because he was making promises to the devil and he was just fucking the devil over.
And now I'm really curious how much the devil paid him per exorcism.
Yeah.
Because if I'm getting paid by the devil per exorcism, I would want to rush through those.
Oh, yeah. And probably do them by Skype. Yeah. We'll do it by Skype. It's fine.
Skype caps it at 45 minutes. This is perfect.
Okay. So there might be a double secret to this one. Moving on.
Anyhow, if you guys feel the calling, apparently they don't pay per annual salary necessarily. We don't know how it's paid. Sorry, well, Chelsea does the next one. I'm going to look up how much the Pope makes and how.
Hey, number two. I have to prepare myself mentally for this one. The Vatican helped Nazi war criminals escape the Allied forces. I'd never heard this secret before, so let's find out about it. After the victory of the Allied forces in Germany to end World War II, the Nazis were forced to seek refuge outside Europe. Thousands of Nazis managed to escape to South America countries, specifically Argentina, Chile, and Brazil. I did know that.
Oh, yeah, we knew about that.
We did know that. Remember that one? It wasn't a mini at that point. That one about, like...
Oh, the Confederate town?
Yes.
Yeah, Confederato or whatever. Yeah, I love
it. Yeah,
that
was so weird.
The place where the South rose.
Yeah, so weird. Harvard researcher Gerald Steinacker wrote a book that shows travel documents pointing to the Vatican having helped the Nazis travel to these countries. Steinacker argues that it was done with the hope of reviving European Christianity and fear of the growing influence of the Soviet Union. The Vatican, however, has refused to comment on these claims. Now, I'm not reading a book by a Harvard researcher, but I did find this Guardian article. Hopefully it's not written by the Harvard researcher. Not sure. Would be. The article is titled, Red Cross and Vatican Helped Thousands of Nazis to Escape Second World War, The Guardian. The Red Cross and the Vatican both helped thousands of Nazis war criminals and collaborators to escape after the Second World War, according to a book that pulls together evidence from unpublished documents. The Red Cross has previously acknowledged that its efforts to help refugees were used by Nazis because administrators were overwhelmed, but the research suggests the numbers were much higher than thought. Gerald Steinacker, a researcher... Oh, damn it! I was trying to get away from the Harvard researcher. Gerald Steinacker, a research fellow at Harvard University, was given access to thousands of internal documents in the archives of the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC. The documents include Red Cross travel documents issued mistakenly to Nazis in the post-war chaos. They throw light on how and why mass murderers such as Adolf Eichmann, Joseph Mengele, and Klaus Barbie, and thousands of others evaded capture by the Allies. By comparing lists of wanted war criminals to travel documents, Steinacker says Britain and Canada alone inadvertently took in around 8,000 former Waffen-SS members in 1947. Many of the basis of valid documents issued mistakenly. The documents, which are discussed in Steinacker's book, Nazi on the Run, How Hitler's Henchmen Fled Justice, offer a significant insight into Vatican thinking, particularly because its own archives beyond 1939 are still closed. The Vatican has consistently refused to comment. Steinacker believes the Vatican's help was based on the hoped-for revival of European Christianity and dread of the Soviet Union. But through the Vatican Refugee Commission, war criminals were knowingly provided with false identities. The Red Cross, overwhelmed by millions of refugees, relied substantially on Vatican references and the often cursory Allied military checks in issuing travel papers, known as 10-100s. 10-100s? I don't know what to make of this.
10,100s.
Yeah, maybe. Could be. Continue. It believed it was primarily helping innocent refugees through correspondence between Red Cross delegations in Genoa, Rome, and Geneva, showing it was aware Nazis were getting through. Quote, although the ICRC has publicly apologized, its actions went well beyond helping a few people, end quote, said Steinacker. Steinacker says the documents indicate that the Red Cross, mostly in Rome or Genoa, issued at least 120,000 of the 10-100s, and that 90% of ex-Nazis fled via Italy, mostly to Spain and North and South America, notably Argentina. Former SS members often mixed with genuine refugees and presented themselves as stateless ethnic Germans to gain transit papers. Jews trying to get to Palestine via Italy were sometimes smuggled over the border with escaping Nazis. Aww. Steinacker says that individual Red Cross delegations issued war criminals with 10-100s out of sympathy for individuals, political attitude, or simply because they were overburdened. Stolen documents were also used to whisk Nazis to safety. He said they were really in a dilemma.
It makes sense. They stole a lot of documents.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true. He said, quote, they were really in a dilemma. It was difficult. It wanted to get rid of the job. Nobody wanted to do it, end quote. The Red Cross refused to comment directly on Steinacker's findings, but the organization says on its website, quote, the ICRC has previously deplored the fact that Eichmann and other Nazi war criminals misused its travel documents to cover their tracks, end quote. So I will admit this article was about both the Red Cross and the Vatican, so either disregard the Red Cross part or regard it.
And wait for our episode on the Red Cross, obviously, because yeah. This might not be their only bad thing.
I'm going to go with no, if this is one of the bad things that they've done. Yeah, so I guess both the Vatican and the Red Cross populated various countries in the world with Nazis.
Yeah.
So, and that's great.
I mean, it's a good thing that they're not ready for a resurgence, hey? And all of their children are just, you know, what? Probably in their 80s, so. Like, I guess they're not a big concern. But their grandchildren, they're ready to rule the world. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, the implications of that are, like, crazy when you start thinking about it.
Yeah.
And plus,
notifications on the rise right now, which is terrifying, but
it is, I know, which is like crazy to think. And I was just listening to Behind the Bastards all about,
was it dinosaurs?
What? No.
Yeah, that's the most recent episode's the dinosaur guy.
It's about dinosaurs?
Yeah.
No, it was the one before that, maybe, about Germany.
Oh, post-war Germany and like all the rearing of children. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It was how they like bred Nazis.
And they told them like you can't speak to children and they have to like wear, yes, that thing that keeps their back posture perfect and it like pulls,
yeah,
onto,
you can't,
their hair,
speak,
yeah,
to them even as a baby. Like once they were born you had to put them in a room and not talk to them or hold them. You could only like feed them for 20 minutes and after that you like had to stop feeding them.
Yeah, if they didn't latch it was their own fault. Yeah.
There's like so many episodes on it too. And then they went on about
the other end of the spectrum when the Nazis,
the left, other end, yeah, the children of the Nazis. And that one was bleak. Let me tell you that. I actually turned it off. So on to number three, the Vatican made money from the Holocaust. Who would have thought after secret number two, as labeled by the Vatican?
Huh. Wait. Okay, yeah. I didn't realize they numbered their secrets.
All of the stuff I never heard, and it, like I said in my opener, it just led me on this like search for all this information that I couldn't have possibly put into one episode. And yeah, we have some good episodes coming up as about I keep referring to them as Nazis now, but it's the Vatican.
I mean, what's the difference?
Same thing. Apparently.
Is it just more history?
Secret 3, the Vatican made money from the Holocaust. So, In addition to aiding the escape of thousands of Nazis from Europe, the Vatican was also involved in helping smuggle Nazi-looted art, golf, and other property belonging to Jewish families.
Sorry, did you say golf?
I did. I don't know. Talk to the article I got this
from. Okay.
I'm not really sure what they were smuggling off that was golf, but one can only speculate. Clubs, perhaps?
Oh.
About halfway through reading golf, I was like, golf can't be right. But then I was like, maybe if no one questions it, golf is okay. Right.
Well, I hope we get this one past the listeners.
Gerald Posner, an American journalist, says that Bernardino Nogara, apparently infamous person, I was going to say bad guy. He might be a bad guy. He's probably a bad guy, but I don't know that for sure yet.
If you're infamous, you're a bad guy, just so you know.
Yeah, have you heard about him? Bernardino Nogara.
Apparently I have, but I'm going to wait and see.
Is this AI Taylor speaking?
I got to talk to the Pope, see if I should recognize this guy.
Okay. Okay, Nogara, the financial advisor to the Vatican, is believed to have been one of a Nazi spy. He is believed to have instituted a horrifying scheme that allowed the Vatican to invest money in Italian insurance companies that kept the assets from the life insurance plans of the murdered Jewish families. Since the Vatican was an investor and not a direct insurer, they did not need to return any of the money made using the scheme. I had a long look into this backstory here. This is obviously a tiny portion of a way bigger picture going on, but World War II obviously played a huge role in the creation of the Vatican Bank, as well as the unique power it held. As the Allies imposed restrictions on bank accounts, it became harder to move money around. This Bernardino Nogara dude created the bank called the Institute for Religious Works in 1942 to avoid having financial transactions tracked through the Western banks. Because it resided in the Vatican City, it was exempt from all wartime restrictions and became the world's best offshore bank. I was in quotes.
I kind of contest that a little bit because Switzerland exists not that far away.
Okay.
Just
I can get
you can keep
that.
Going, but Switzerland has like all the Nazi gold after this.
I mean, maybe this is something to look into for another episode.
I do also want to state that you did say that this is a unique point in the Catholic Church's history. The entire time the Catholic Church has existed, it's been a unique situation. So,
oh, yeah.
I don't think that we can say just like it's unique here. It's always unique because it's such a weird thing overall.
Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing that up. This is just a tiny portion of a way bigger picture, and I kept seeing the Nazis come up in this history, so I kind of did some like a little bit of Googling, which opened up a lot. A whole portion of this is the Vatican banking system that we only touch on a little bit here, making money from the Holocaust. And I just mentioned the, what is it called here? The Institute for Religious Works. There's a whole other story to this. I started writing it. I realized it wasn't going to be covered in one episode. So I left that for another episode. So it might be an interesting thing to look into. But for right now, yes, I agree with you. And this is just a little tiny portion of the Vatican making money off the Holocaust. Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry, I just want to understand there. They own the insurance company that was paying out the life or should have been paying out the life insurance policies, but
they were invested in it through the bank.
Okay. Okay.
From what I understand.
And yeah, I just wanted to make sure because there's another way to make money off of life insurance policies where you can technically take a policy out on somebody else who you have a vested interest in, and they weren't taking policies out on Jews. So that's, I just wanted to make sure that wasn't what was happening.
Oh, okay, I was like, is this another part? It very well could have, but...
But that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about investing in an insurance company.
The bank was invested in the insurance companies. A German officer admitted to having many wartime spies in the Vatican, one of them potentially being Nogara, the acclaimed and able financial advisor. During the war, Nogara began investing in Italian insurance companies, which developed into stakes that profited from the ongoing murders of Europe's Jews, Posner wrote. These companies made money while keeping all financial assets from life insurance insurance policies of deceased Jewish policyholders and refusing to pay for those still living. But because the Vatican was not a direct insurer, it was never required to pay restitution after the war. Many financial records were destroyed during the war.
Wait, but wouldn't the company they're invested in have to pay restitutions?
I'm sure it did.
So did they technically pay restitutions?
It sounds like, from what I'm reading, that they benefited from it and were
But also, like, the stock would have been impacted by the insurance company having to pay restitution.
Yeah, I don't know, like, the details.
I get that. It's the corporate bureaucracy bullshit, so we don't have to technically take it into account. But if they're only invested in a company that did the bad thing, then that company would have paid restitutions on their behalf, I guess, because they were invested in them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense to them. But would, if they paid on their behalf, would they then would have been impacted by it, the Vatican?
Well, I guess because they wouldn't have got an increase in shareholder value and or a dividend from it.
Let's go on and see what it says, because I don't 100% know.
Okay.
But then again, this is not the Vatican saying all of this. So this is, I mean, speculation. The companies made money by keeping all financial assets from life insurance policies of deceased Jewish policyholders and refusing to pay for those still living. But because the Vatican was not a direct insurer, it was never required to pay restitution after the war. Many financial records were destroyed during the war, and the Vatican refused access to its own records. Therefore, the full scope of the scheme remains unclear. Meanwhile, the Pope at the time refused to publicly denounce anything the Third Reich was doing, even though the Vatican was one of the most informed institutions on the mass killings long before the Allies discovered anything. The Vatican Bank was the perfect place to hide billions in stolen wartime loot. The church also aided and saved many Nazi war criminals after the war, which refer back to secret number two. And so, no, it doesn't go into the details that you were speaking about, Taylor, and I don't, unfortunately, have access to those records. Council of Popes here, Journey to the Fringe, might, but they do honestly seem to be rather tight-lipped about it.
Yeah, I honestly, for the most part, like 95% of these popes that we're talking to are going to have no idea about modern insurance policies. So I understand.
Yeah.
Also, like, a good chunk of them are anti-Semitic. So I think they're also in agreement with what happened.
Yeah. Also, it just kept opening other doorways for me to look into things. Like I said, the Vatican Bank is one. Whole lot of bad stuff going on there. And just something I learned during this episode, because I grew a curious. This part of history would have been under Pope Pius? Pius? X11.
Pius sounds right. Yeah.
Whatever.
Pius the 11th or Pius the 2nd?
X11.
Oh, the 12th.
Yeah, exactly. I found an article in the Smithsonian Magazine, of all places, a second secret source, titled Secret Giants Discover Newly Unsealed Vatican Archives Layout Evidence of Pope Pius XII's Knowledge of the Holocaust. Pope Pius XII's silence on the fate of millions of Jews killed during the Holocaust has clouded his legacy with controversy. This is now our second Vatican secret to do with Nazis, or third. I've lost count here at this point. To critics, the Pontiff's refusal to publicly condemn the Nazis represented a shameful moral failing with devastating consequences. In his polarizing 1999 biography of Pius, British journalist John Cornwell argued that the religious leader placed the papacy's supremacy above the plight of Europe's Jews, winning a modicum of power and protection from the rising threat of communism by becoming Hitler's pope and pawn. Supporters, however, say that Pius's silence was calculated to prevent German retaliation and ensure the continued success of the Catholic Church's behind-the-scenes efforts to aid victims of Nazi persecution. Documentation related to the Pope's wartime activities has long been housed in the Vatican archives, which remained largely closed to researchers until earlier this year. And this was during COVID in 2020. Now, historians examining new open files from the vast collection say they found evidence detailed in German weekly Die Zeit that suggests Pius learned of the mass slaughter of the Jews in fall 1942. The papers also indicate that, on the advice of an advisor who dismissed the reports as exaggerated, the pontiff told the United States government that the Vatican was unable to confirm news of Nazi crimes. Interest in Pius's actions spiked in 1963 following the premiere of a German play that portrayed the Pope as indifferent to European Jew suffering. In response to the outcry sparked by the drama, the Vatican published an 11-volume collection of the Pontiff's wartime documents. The papers, published in 1965 and 1981, were criticized as selective and insufficient, according to the New York Times' Elisabetta Povilletto. A crucial moment in Pius's relationship with the Nazis arrived in 1933, when the then cardinal spearheaded an agreement between the Germany Holy See and the Third Reich. As Robert A. Craig wrote in Jesuit publication America magazine in 2003, the so-called Concordat was ambiguous in its day, with Adolf Hitler treating it as a sign of international approval of the Nazi regime and the Vatican simply stating that it was made to protect the Church's interests. Adopting a stance of official neutrality, the Vatican refused to yield to Allied pressure to speak out against the Nazis. And since everyone wanted to claim the Pope was on their side, political leaders weren't going to publicly chastise him or accuse him of cozying up to fascists or Nazis. David I. Kurtzer, author of The Pope and Mussolini, The Secret History of Pius the... This one has one less one.
Pius the 11th?
X1, Pius the 11th, and the Rise of Fascism in Europe, told Times' Olivia B. Waxman in 2019.
I would actually be curious if that means that, like, Pius the 11th was followed by Pius the 12th, who kind of ruled over it while the war was happening, whereas Pius the 11th was during the rise of fascist Italy.
Yeah, because this happens...
I also find it very interesting that the U.S. was asking the Pope, hey, what's going on in Europe?
When
they had allies there. Knowledge. And also, there had never been to that point a Catholic president. Like, they've been Protestant all the way up. So,
that's
like, they
question.
Shouldn't like the Catholic Church.
Like, hey, do you think that the Pope knows more of what's going on than anybody else? We should ask him.
Yeah. Hey, Pope, what's going on?
Hey, Pope, what's going
People
on?
People dying?
Per religion, you bring up a good point. Per Religion News Service's Tom Hennigan, historian Hubert Wolf, and the University of Münster, and a team of German academics traveled to Rome for the archive's historic unveiling in early March. Wolf's team was only able to conduct research for a week before COVID-19 shuttered the archives. In that short time span, the scholars discovered a host of documents that, in Hennigan's words, do not look good for Pius or the Catholic Church. On September 18, 1942, Pius's assistant, the future Pope Paul VI, V1, received an eyewitness report of incredible butchery of Jews in Warsaw. 1 month prior, Ukrainian Archbishop Andrei Shiptik, that's mispronounced perfectly, you can bet, had delivered a similar report informing the Pope of atrocities carried out in the Lviv ghetto, reports Heretz Ofer Azaret. Soon after, the United States envoy to the Vatican asked if it could corroborate accounts of mass killings in Warsaw and Lviv. In response, Vatican Secretary of State Luigi Maglioni. Do you think that's Mario and Luigi's last name?
You know, no, their last name is Mario. It's canon.
Oh, right. Reportedly stated, I don't believe we have information that confirms the serious news in detail. While sifting through the papers, the researchers also found a memo from the Vatican staffer that warned against believing the reports, dismissing these accounts on the grounds that Jews easily exaggerate and Orientals, a reference to Archbishop Shepensky, are really not an example of honesty. The memo was conspicuously absent from the 11-volume collection published by the Vatican in defense of Pius's reputation, reports Religion News Service. This is a key document that has been kept hidden from us because it is clearly anti-Semitic and shows why Pius the 12th, we're back to the 12th, did not speak out against the Holocaust, Wolf tells Catholic Weekly Kirche and Leben, as quoted by Religion News Service. Under normal circumstances, papers covering Pius's papacy would have been under lock and key until 2028, or 70 years after the end of his tenure. But last year, at the gathering marking the 80th anniversary of Pius's election, Pope Francis announced the archives' impending opening, telling those gathered that the Church is not afraid of history, rather, she loves it. Who is she?
The church.
The church. Okay. Speaking with Reuters, Philip
Reuters.
Felula, in February, Father Norbert Hoffman, the Vatican's top official in charge of religious relations with Jews, wow, added, I don't think researchers will find a smoking gun. Boy, was that religious relations with Jews expert wrong? ISIS supporters, many of whom had advocated for the Pope's canonization. I love that word, by the way. I always think of a Pope getting blasted out of a cannon. Point out that the Catholic Church saved thousands of Jews by hiding them in churches and monasteries across Italy as well as the Vatican itself. Though, acolytes argue that Pius's inaction and silence allowed these secret actions to continue, critics cite the treatment of Jews living in Rome during World War II. As NPR's Sylvia Paglioli points out, a plaque standing just 800 yards from St. Peter's Square states, on October 16, 1943, entire Jewish Roman families ripped from their homes by the Nazis were brought here and then deported to extermination camps. Of more than 1,000 persons, only 16 survived. Wolf says scholars are still in the early stages of determining the context surrounding the Pope's actions. We have to first check these newly available sources, he tells Kirchi and Levin. If Pius XII comes out of this study and the source is looking better, that's wonderful. If he comes out looking worse, we have to accept that too. Due to COVID-19, the Vatican plans to keep its archive closed until summer at the earliest. Still, says Wolf to Die Zeit's Evelyn Finger. That's a weird name.
This article's a little out of date.
Just a little. Well, I thought it was so funny that the Pope opened the archives with like being like, we don't have anything to hide. And like they found all this stuff and then closed it immediately. Yeah. I can tell you that Pius is not a dead pope convening on Journey to the Fringe, or maybe he is. It's all very mystical and confusing.
There's a lot of Piuses. They don't differentiate themselves, so it's hard to tell which ones are talking. However, none of them are claiming to be this Pius.
Very mystical and confusing. And to finish up our episode, I wasn't prepared at how much Noxy talk there would be on this episode, so I felt like some good news was in order because good news includes aliens and UFOs because it makes us feel good. So number four.
This is kind secret? Of five. It's hard to say though.
Five.
They kind of mesh together very well.
Yeah, like 5 through 8. Is that the secret the Vatican is hiding is evidence of aliens. Aliens are almost always the go-to cover-up for many conspiracy theorists. And the Vatican, I mean, if the number one answer for what are you hiding is aliens. If you were to ask anyone, any person walking down the street, what are you hiding? It's aliens. Guaranteed. And the Vatican is no different than whoever's walking down the street. They're hiding aliens. No exception. Some claim that in 1998, skulls with elongated heads and small faces, resembling the aliens from the Alien franchise, were found underneath the Vatican. Apparently, ever since, the Vatican has kept all evidence of aliens secret. Not that that one was really out in the open, but ever since then, everything else has been secret, as to not discredit Christianity. Some still believe that the Vatican has much more direct evidence of aliens, with a few even claiming that there are several live aliens tucked away inside the Vatican's secret archive. I really hope that they're feeding those aliens that they have filed away in a filing cabinet.
Lest they disappear themselves, like that one that John Lear talked about.
Or, lest the aliens actually believe in Jesus too, like some of the aliens that I have come across, but we've not yet done an episode
on. You know,
that
could be the thing that, if the Vatican wouldn't be hiding them if the aliens also believed in Jesus.
Oh no.
Never mind, guys.
Yeah. They would for sure tell us. So why they would keep aliens a secret and why such aliens would be living in the Vatican's secret archive of all places is unknown, except for by the popes.
Well, yeah. And possibly the astronomers working for the papacy. They have that whole wing of astronomy through the church, which I've always found weird, but they have it.
Yeah, it is a little bit weird, but I mean, they have a bank, so they got lots of money to look for extraterrestrial life. That's okay. I mean, okay, I have answers. That's probably what it is. They're searching for extraterrestrial life, probably.
But doesn't that mean they don't have it? Or are they searching for its home? They got ET.
Both.
Okay. But that's it.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all they're looking for, and that's all of the secrets that I have for today.
Well, that's good. And I think we can very safely entitle this The Pope and the Vatican's Nazi Secrets, because it was very squarely in that outside of that.
It was
one.
A little Nazi heavy.
Yeah. I would also be curious how many of those exorcisms happened to Nazis.
Oh, that's a good question.
And importantly, that's just we're at this point now, we can wait. We can speculate on it. But most importantly, I want to know the success rate. When you're performing 160,000 exorcisms, you can't have 100%.
No, well, I mean, maybe he like covers that up by saying like not many of them are actually
exorcisms. And sorry, this is outsider speculation that the talks with the devil were him getting paid. So there's that. And also, my speculation on that one. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, he said like very few were actually possessions. So at what point do you start counting them?
Are they just saying he's faking it?
Or obviously not all of them are real. Like, then why do you have 160,000 exorcisms under your belt, sir? He sounds like a liar immediately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I'm also concerned with is it like taking like medicine? And if you don't get it gone the whole way, does it make it worse? So did he end up with like super exorcisms after screwing up a few exorcisms?
There is a lot of questions. And I think I can answer for you, yes, if it's not gone the whole way, like you're only just pissing it off. And of course it comes back with more rage.
Yeah. Okay, it's exactly like antibiotics then, just as I expected.
Yeah, it's exactly like that, yeah.
Okay. And also,
exorcists are like antibiotics.
Gotta take them all the way. And just so that we can finish off, the Pope doesn't take a salary per se. However, retired popes do get a pension, which is $3,300 per month, because there's one retired pope right now, Pope Benedict, who didn't die in office. He retired. He gets $3,300 a month. So an annual salary right around $40,000.
Wow. Don't popes usually die?
Yeah, they die in office. Yeah. So that's kind of an oddity. But it does go to show that they rely on volunteers all the way to the top.
Well, we learned a lot of new things in this
episode. We learned way too much. You popes, got screwed over a little bit. You did live a lavish life, most of you. So you know what? We'll talk about you when we get there. Anyhow, I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes, or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.